Rebound snatched by Stevenson. Long pass to the other end, and Thaddeus Young lays it in.
Now that was a pass right there.
Hello and welcome into another Sideline Guys podcast. I'm Pat Boylan, Pacers radio host and sideline reporter. TV host and sideline reporter Jeremiah Johnson joins us. The Pacers are out in Orlando. That's where Jeremiah is. I'm here in downtown Indianapolis, and we are coming to you while this will probably here get posted on Saturday morning. We are talking to you on Friday night, and we wanted to wait until a couple of important games completed. That was Atlanta at Cleveland and Miami at Toronto. The most important of those games as it relates to the Pacers, certainly Miami at Toronto, and the Pacers get their desired result there. Toronto comes up with a win, keeping Miami at bay. And Atlanta, a very surprise win over Cleveland. They were missing many key players and won in Cleveland. But overall, a pretty good night for the Pacers as it relates to their playoff odds. And I would guess you're out in Orlando. The weather's probably warm. Probably a good night in general for you.
Yeah, pretty good night. It's crazy when I got on the plane today to think about this topsy-turvy season with so many different storylines and basically just an up-and-down season. And it was crazy to think that we were boarding the airplane for the final regular season road trip. And when the schedule comes out, you look at the different dates and the games you're looking forward to and maybe the different road trips. And this little two-game trip, Orlando, Philadelphia, it seemed like, you know, such a long time ago back in August and September. And now that it's here, there's a lot of excitement, especially because of what's happened in the last week. And we'll go into the details of what, you know, the changes that we've seen with this team over the last three games. But there are a lot of playoff implications with every game, not just involving the Pacers, but involving basically five other teams in the Eastern Conference. So I devoted my evening to getting a quick workout in and following the action on NBA TV and on League Pass, and I was very surprised to see if there was one team that was going to win, that it was the shorthanded Atlanta Hawks winning at Cleveland. And Rick Campbell on NBA TV, he said it was the biggest upset of the season to him, just given Atlanta's roster. And I'm reading some of the comments from the Cavs, and, you know, Cleveland looked like they figured everything out in that win against Boston. And now it's back to what, you know, they've been a little consistently inconsistent. I saw one of their beat writers use that term to describe them this season. I said, wait a second, I think that's the Pacers. What Aaron Brooks, yeah, that's what the Pacers are. So who knows, but pretty good night in Orlando and looking forward to that game tomorrow.
Yeah, there. When you look at the playoff picture, and first of all, before we get any further, I just want to slightly apologize because typically when we record these, you're in your hotel room, I'm in my apartment, and my apartment's pretty echoey. And so what I do is I open the window. I overlook Georgia Street. I'm on the fifth floor. So I open the window, and that helps rid of the echo. But at 10:35 on a Friday night over Georgia Street in Indianapolis, if I opened the window, I would have to have the sensor button ready as well. So if we're a little bit echoey, I apologize for that. But talking about Atlanta and Cleveland, the Pacers probably wanted Cleveland to win because Atlanta's loss opens up as many avenues as possible. That's what the Pacers are looking for, as many different avenues as they can to make the playoffs. So Atlanta beating Cleveland hurts that avenue a little bit. Atlanta now two games ahead of the Pacers with three to play. The Pacers still have one against the Hawks. So not unthinkable the Pacers could catch them. You and I were talking just before this, though. There may be a couple of silver linings as it relates to Atlanta and Cleveland, because with Cleveland's loss now, the Celtics are still in reach of the Cavs, despite the Cavs having tiebreaker. The Celtics still are in reach of them, which might mean Cleveland is playing harder the rest of the way, and Cleveland has some important games against teams that Indiana is trying to finish ahead of. So maybe not all bad news there.
Yeah, except you wonder, before the game, Tyronn Lue said that they were going to not rest Kyrie and LeBron until they clinch the number one seed. And I think he probably said that thinking that at minimum happens Sunday and definitely comes closer on Friday. Well, they didn't get that win. And then Kyrie Irving complained of some injury. And you're just seeing some things on Twitter. Maybe it's not serious, but something that's been bothering him for a little bit. So who knows what Cleveland will do? I'm beyond trying to predict how they'll react to things, what they will do, what they will say, who they will decide to play. But Atlanta's a team that I was almost counting as the Pacers' best chance to pass, knowing they had that one game coming up next Wednesday. If you just got to within one game of the Hawks, you could go into that final game knowing you could beat them and take the tiebreaker. And I saw this little two-game stretch with Atlanta playing Boston and Cleveland as a couple of losses, and they get these wins. And tonight, you can't even look and figure out who is on the floor together and whether they've even had any combinations, probably any rotations in playing time. It might be fun to look on NBA.com/stats to see the five-man combinations that they trotted out there for the majority of the game and whether they had played together. And this is at Cleveland as well. It's crazy,
right?
But that's what happens, and maybe Atlanta means business when I thought about a week ago or 2 weeks ago it looked like they didn't even want to be in the playoffs.
Well, I guess we'll get to see, because as we alluded to, Cleveland could play a large role in whether Indiana makes it or not, and if they do, where the Pacers end up finishing, because they just got done with Atlanta. On Sunday, they'll play Atlanta again, this time in Atlanta, and this time seemingly some of those guys who had nagging injuries, perhaps a Millsap, a Schroeder kind of player, are ready for that Sunday game. And then on Monday, they take on the Heat, do the Cavs. That's on a back-to-back. The Cavs, we know, don't typically love throwing out all their starters on back-to-backs all the time. But with this loss, perhaps they need those games to lock up the one seed, which could be the one bright spot in that result. The other result that happened just moments ago, and Toronto made it interesting but ended up holding on. They beat Miami, and that's probably the most important result of the night. So headed in here Saturday morning, as we get ready for Saturday's slate of games, the Pacers have a one-game lead on the Heat. Now, if the Pacers and Heat finish tied, Miami wins that tiebreak. But the good news for Indiana is they've got Orlando, Philadelphia, and Atlanta to close, and the Miami schedule is brutal. They've got Washington twice, and they've got Cleveland once. So it's going to be very difficult for Miami to win those three games. And if Miami only finishes 2-1, then the Pacers would just need to finish 1-2. If Miami wins out, the Pacers can still get in by by winning out themselves. So Indiana's magic number headed into Saturday morning is 3. 3 wins gets it done on their own, or any combination of Pacers wins or Heat losses. There's other ways to get in. They could pass Chicago. They could pass Milwaukee would be tough, but Atlanta's still not out of the picture. But it's starting to look like Miami is that most likely result. So for Indiana, they know they will not be able to clinch on Saturday. But Saturday, tomorrow, tonight, however you're listening to this, could end up being a pretty important night, because the Heat are in Washington, D.C., taking on the Wizards, who have something to play for, the Pacers in Orlando. So theoretically, if everything were to go right tomorrow, which is a pretty big if, Pacers beat Magic and Wizards beat Heat, the Pacers could then have their magic number down to 1 with 2 games to play, which obviously is the ideal scenario.
Yeah, I think you'd love to have a playoff spot solidified prior to playing that game against Atlanta on Wednesday. You never want to go into the final game of this season. Even needing a win and controlling your own destiny would be okay, I think, but you'd like to at least know you were going into the playoffs, and maybe you were just playing for seeding, and maybe you're watching the scoreboard, and maybe you're able to pull Paul George at a different time, depending on how the other action that night is going. But we're getting a little bit ahead of things, and I think a week ago we probably didn't envision that we would have this conversation, but the last two games, you know, I did think all along, coming home and playing Toronto and Milwaukee, that this team could win those games and had a decent chance to win them even before Lance Stephenson came. But with what we've seen from the team, with the spark that they have right now, you just got to hope that you go to Orlando and play that game Saturday night and you take care of business. It's crazy around the NBA, teams that have nothing to play for, teams that are resting players. You think Frank Vogel might want to beat the Pacers tomorrow night? I mean, I'm not sure that all of his players would share the same, you know, enthusiasm and zest for trying to get this win and get revenge. And you wonder how much these players are playing for their coach. You'd think that they would be, you know, supportive of Frank and on his side, but it's been a rough season for them, and I think their roster is going to look completely different next year, so that could play into the Pacers' hand just a little bit. But the Pacers have dominated the Magic each of those three times they've played this season. This is Frank Vogel's Super Bowl. It won't be easy, but I'm looking forward to seeing what happens.
Yeah, the Magic game obviously has implications and interesting aspects with not only Frank Vogel, but former Pacers players on that team. Indiana goes to Philadelphia. Touch on them in a moment. I want to rewind to those games you were talking about at home and maybe even hit on that Cleveland game if you feel necessary. You were obviously there, so you might have a better feel for this. But, you know, Lance Stephenson comes in, and I think it's a little bit of a debate how much credit to give him. Is it like 80%? Is it 40%? As you stated, the Pacers had been playing, for the most part, really well at home this season, and they had impressive wins at home this season. So, you know, I don't just want to hand everything over to Lance. This is me personally. But clearly there's a spark. Clearly when he comes in and there's a standing ovation, you know, that gets guys pumped up. Clearly when he's making plays and talking in people's ears and maybe taking it one step too far, as we saw versus Toronto, it's still firing guys up. And, you know, we were talking to Dan Burke, and I don't know, this might run on the Fox pregame show, but he had an interesting comment, and you know how Dan never holds back. You know better than anyone. But he said after practice today, he mentioned that, you know, we've got a lot of flatliners on this team, and that's the opposite of what Stephenson is. So he put it pretty up front and pretty bold with that statement. But it's something I think they all realize and maybe wouldn't have said before Lance got in. But clearly, he brings something, and we'll see how much that impact is going forward and whether it can be sustained, but at least in a small burst, I think you would agree that the Stephenson signing has been a big addition.
I think that around middle of the season, I think I had a conversation with Chris Denary about Lance Stephenson and whether he could eventually come back to the Pacers, and I'll admit that Chris was probably more on the side of thinking it would be a good thing and why not and let Lance come back here than I was. And I just looked at what didn't work in the other teams that he played for, and I kind of wondered, you know, why would he come back to the Pacers and automatically be a good fit? But given the way things went and not winning back-to-back games since February 6th, I think that Rodney Stuckey's injury just opened an opportunity where there was a chance to get somebody else in here, and you needed some backup help in the backcourt and on the wing, and Lance was right there. I didn't know what kind of shape he would be in, what kind of impact he could make, and I kind of wondered how well he would fit, considering some of the things that when the Pacers were not playing well, they weren't moving the ball, they weren't, you know, running offense very well, and sometimes he doesn't move the ball. But it's weird, he's moving the ball, but it's not your normal ball movement, I guess, that we're used to seeing. And so the best thing that I would say is that everybody else on the team has not taken Lance and said, oh, who is this guy? How can he help us? But they've said, this is someone who can help us. And they understand. It's not like Lance Stephenson walked in that door in Quicken Loans Arena on Saturday at the end of that Pacers practice and people needed to be introduced to Lance. They knew of him. Only a couple guys actually knew him well on the team besides the coaching staff and the trainers. But they understood that he's kind of a spark guy right now at this point in his career. And maybe it looks like he could even turn into more than that. But with six games to go, that's what he was going to do to try to help this team. And if Paul George is on board with it, then everybody else has to be on board with it. I mean, this is Paul's team. And no matter who you talk to in times during this season, there is one pretty unanimous feeling on that team that it's Paul's team. And you can argue at times whether Paul is doing the absolute best from a leadership perspective and whether he's got all that figured out in terms of that part of his job. But everybody else looks to him and understands this team is nowhere without Paul George. And if Paul George wants Lance here, then everybody else is going to buy in. And I can't tell you what it was like watching that game in Cleveland, or I can tell you it was like a playoff game. And I was amazed immediately after going into that game, after having played, I think, 12 games prior to that game on Saturday all season, some of them limited minutes in Minnesota. He got some heavy minutes in New Orleans earlier in the year. But I was amazed that he went up there and basically ruffled LeBron's feathers. I mean, at times LeBron looked at Lance kind of like, who do you think you are? But he was agitating LeBron James. LeBron was shooting free throws, and Lance wasn't even in the game, and LeBron was talking to him. And I couldn't decide whether I thought it was a good thing or not until I saw him miss both of his free throws. And I said, I can't believe we're at this point again. and it kind of works. And then Paul George just is like, he's Lance Bird, Paul on, and then Paul just went crazy. And then after that game, though, I said, despite everything working perfectly, Lance providing a spark, Paul playing, you know, perhaps his best game of the season, you still lose. And that's where I think Lance's spark and his energy helped on Tuesday, because in the time between Sunday night's trip back from Cleveland to Tuesday's game, everybody knew you had to win the Raptors game. I mean, they can look at the standings and the schedules, and you can say, oh, well, the Bulls could lose out or whatever. You had to kind of win a game or two in a row, or a couple in a row, and play well to really feel like you even deserve to be in the playoffs. And the spark that Lance provided at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, I mean, you were there. I was actually up in the Fox Loft just until prior to tip-off, so I didn't get to hear all of the lineups. But when I walked through the tunnel, I honestly thought I was walking into one of those playoff games with the gold Pacer jerseys on, and there were no flags or T-shirts in the crowd. But there was just a buzz in that building, and it just kind of never left. And it was amazing to see that. And then they avoided the letdown against the Bucks on Thursday, which you could say you can't have a letdown. Who is this team to have a letdown? But you never know what would happen on Thursday. So I'm amazed at the Lance effect. I think that they're calling it on the radio and different places. I'm amazed at what I've seen. I'm impressed and happy with the way everybody has really taken Lance in. And now I think it's probably good for people in our positions and the media covering to take a big picture view and to not now every game say, this is because of Lance. I think Lance lit the spark, but it's up to everyone else to keep the fire going, and we've seen them keep that fire going. And a lot of guys are doing a lot of good things. You had six in double figures against the Bucks, and Lance wasn't one of them. So he was the person that I chose to do the walk-off interview with just because of the week in it, kind of the week in totality, and you had to talk to Paul after the game on Tuesday. But he was he wasn't the star of the game Thursday, but he was certainly someone I wanted to talk to, and we're enjoying talking to really at any opportunity we get. So what a week, and for it to be so unpredictable, I guess that's the one thing that should have been predicted.
It was almost like the game against Toronto I'm speaking of. It almost felt like I was watching a movie. The Pacers got down 19. They won by 18. How often you see, look, I know the NBA is a game of runs. You do not see 37-point runs and switches hardly ever. A game where the Pacers looked like they were going to get blown out. They end up blowing him out. Lance Stephenson has this unbelievable effect. And it's almost like the Pacers needed this one guy to sort of light the fire, and then they all followed. I mean, I've never seen Jeff Teague do that in my life, and I thought you had the perfect line. I think it was in the post-game show right after. I'm just listening in my earpiece. I'm not watching, but I'm listening, and I think it was in the post-game where you said, I'm not sure he's done that at Pike. I'm not sure he's done that at Wake. I'm not sure he's done that with Atlanta, but all of a sudden he's got his arms flexing, his legs wailing out, he's doing the half Superman rip off the shirt, he's screaming at the top of his lungs. Jeff Teague, not Miles Turner, not Paul George, Jeff Teague doing that. And of course the other guys were too, but to sum up, I think everything that Lance brings, I think it was in that minute, in that moment when Teague hits a shot. It wasn't vital to the game, the Pacers already had it in a good position, but to see Teague react like that, I almost had to double take. Was I looking at the right guy? Am I really awake? That was something else. And I think if you maybe are thinking that some of this is being overstated, perhaps you haven't been to one of these two games and you're just watching on TV or listening on the radio or following online. You say, okay, look, they won a couple games, but let's not get carried away. Well, I agree from the fact, like, let's wait and see if this effect can last throughout the season and hopefully into the playoffs. But at the same point, you can't argue what Lance Stephenson has brought to this team from an emotional aspect. And if you think Jeff Teague had ever done that, at least here, he certainly has it. And I think his reactions in that moment encapsulate everything that is the, in quotes, Lance effect.
That was the image of the night, I think, that stuck in my head. And when I said it, I was just going to say, we haven't seen that all season. But then I thought, you know, we know Jeff Teague. I remember when he was in high school and walked into Fox 59 to do an interview to promote one of the summer city county all-star games. And I had covered him in high school games, and I'm not sure that I had a chance to actually talk to him prior to that. But we had to pot his mic up quite a bit to be able to just hear what he had to say. And it was one of those interviews that's probably planned to be 4 or 5 minutes on a Sunday night or a Friday night show. And I think I had to ask probably 15 or 20 questions because he just that's just his personality. So it was awesome to see him react that way. And really, the other thing I thought that was noteworthy to me was after the game, and I don't really see everything that's posted on social media. I have a Facebook account, but I don't check it very often. I'm not on Instagram, but I'm on Twitter a lot. And I saw Miles Turner after the game say shout out to Lance for bringing the fun back and also to the fans for the energy. And for somebody like, you know, Miles, I think is someone that's still learning how the NBA works. And, you know, sometimes he catches himself, I think, trying to fit in, but then, you know, deciding when is the proper time for him to show his emotions, because I think we saw it a lot last year. He's been a little more reserved this year, but I think he understood in that game the power of positive emotion. And he didn't know Lance at all before this week. He gave Lance the credit, so I think it's okay for everyone else to do the same. And I think that, you know, just moving forward, we acknowledge the Lance Stephenson effect. We watch him. We understand there's going to be some good moments. There's going to be some moments that are just Lance, but you have to hope that there's more good than bad. And you know, no matter what, there won't be as many moments where the effort is lacking. And I think energy, effort, whatever it is, sense of urgency, all the buzzwords that we've heard this season from Nate and from coaches and from players, those shouldn't be an issue over these last three games, and we can, I think, give Lance a pat on the back for that.
Yeah, to close on Lance, and you touched on this, and I want to hammer it home. You know, imagine a scenario where you've got a group of guys where you know half of them, and the other half you meet in August, and you are with those guys just about every single day of the year, whether it's in a game, whether it's in practice. August, September, October, November, December, January, February, March, you're one cohesive unit. And then all of a sudden, as if it's some reality TV show, and every NBA team deals with this, but this was a really unique circumstance. Rodney Stuckey gets hurt, he leaves, and this new guy comes in. And not just any new guy, a guy that has a lot of flair about him, a guy who got a, you know, who got this year guaranteed and next year guaranteed as well, despite the fact that he had been bouncing around a lot of teams. Obviously, Larry Bird's faith in him is well known and looking to be like the very smart move that we hope it'll be. But all of a sudden, this guy comes in who has the city's heart and a lot of the city's heart and has all these moments. I would think that it would be very easy if you are somebody who's not from here. Let's just say Thaddeus Young, for example, because he's a guy who would never feel this way because Thad's such a good guy. I think it'd be sort of easy to resent that. All of a sudden, you're bringing in a guy who might take some of my minutes, who might take some of my spotlight. We're shuffling up the locker room with 6 games to go. That might not be the easiest thing to welcome somebody, anybody in those circumstances, but especially a guy who is as polarizing as Lance Stephenson is and has a past here and has only played with Paul George, Lavoy Allen, and Al Jefferson, and Lavoy Allen and Al Jefferson aren't even playing a whole lot lately, and Lavoy not even all in that last game. As much credit as we give to Lance, I think the rest of the locker room, the rest of the team deserves a lot of credit too, because welcoming him in, if they don't do that, and if you don't see those tweets from Miles Turner, that attitude from Miles Turner, from Paul George, Jeff Teague, those guys down the line, it doesn't really matter what Lance Stephenson wants to do if those guys are resenting him in some fashion. And I think to hammer home the Lance Stephenson point, that would be it. It's a two-way street, and at least for 3 games, both ways are flowing pretty well.
Absolutely. I think you pretty much said it all. And one thing you did say, they were a cohesive unit. I think that may be the one thing. They weren't always a cohesive unit, so they understood everything they've tried. You think about how many different style changes and scheme changes and rotation changes. They've pretty much tried everything this season to figure out what can work, and nothing's really been sustainable. So I don't think, you know, no one was in a position to really say, we can't try Lance because we're so good right now. What did you have to lose? Everybody wants to get into the playoffs. Everybody wants to, you know, be in as opposed to being out. It doesn't benefit any player to get extra ping pong balls or to be in the lottery. They want to be a playoff team. So if he could be the spark that they needed, they accepted it and sure fired up the crowd. I will say that.
Hey, if nothing else, it's made things interesting. But at least if the Pacers can close here in the final three like they played their most recent three, if they do that, they're going to have more games than three left in the regular season. If that is the case, which, by the way, I like to go to 538.com. It's a numbers site that is affiliated with ESPN and will give predictions, percentages on things. Of course, it's not always right. The game of numbers never is. But right now, as of Friday night, Saturday morning, they're giving the Pacers a 79% chance to make the playoffs with all of tonight's results in, at least the ones that are important to Indiana. So if the Pacers are able to take care of business, our pick three is going to be first round opponents that you would rather see versus others, correct?
Yeah, this was, to be honest, we were kind of waiting on what our best pick three subject could be. And I want to be perfectly clear, we aren't speaking for the organization, which obviously we never are in this podcast, but this is just something that I check the standings probably 10 times a day, and I check the upcoming schedule, especially over the last couple of weeks. You'd think I'd have it all memorized, but I still find a matchup or a date that I didn't realize the Hornets played, the whoever. So I'm checking these all the time, and I'm kind of envisioning, I'll admit, some of it a little bit selfish. Where do I want to go for a series? But more importantly, what would be the best series for the Pacers? What would be the matchup? Because the playoffs are, the playoffs are awesome. Even before I had this position, I just loved the NBA playoffs. And we talked about the 90s Pacers and just kind of catching that bug and just being a part of this series. And it's just so fun to be a part of the NBA playoffs. And so, you got to think a little bit, look ahead. What would be a good series? What would be a good matchup? And there's a clear separation in the Eastern Conference. You've got the four teams that are really the home court advantage teams. And then right now we've got basically five. I'm going to count Charlotte out of it, but five teams for the final four spots. And you could say right now on the Saturday before, the end of the regular season, you could be matched up with any one of those teams in spots one through four, unlike the Western Conference, where it appears the matchups are almost all already set, with the exception of maybe who's going to have home court advantage. So the East is pretty entertaining over the last 5 days or so, and the matchups could be. So if you are tossing it to me and I get a pick first, which matchup would I rather see? I'm going to take Pacers Wizards with my first selection. Partially because I think that it's maybe the Pacers' best chance to win a series. Obviously, no one has been, I'm not sure that anybody has a better Eastern Conference record since January 1st than Washington. Maybe it would, at one point it was Miami, but basically since the first week or two in December, the Wizards have been a phenomenal team. But I still look at the roster and I wonder sometimes about the depth on in the second unit. And I think, okay, Bradley Beal, John Wall, I respect immensely, and he's having a fantastic season. But until you have that playoff success, I'm going to make you show me you can do it before you actually do it. And the Pacers, I feel like at times, have been a decent matchup with the Wizards. They have that playoff series victory, which now it's only, basically Paul and Lance and I guess a little bit of Lavoie that's mixed in with that one. But I think that would be an entertaining matchup. I'd like to see Jan Mahimi, I'm sure you'd like to see him a few more times. I'd like to go to Washington, D.C. for the series. And the other thing is I don't think Bankers Life Fieldhouse would have too many Wizards fans either. So that's another thing that I'm going to go for Pacers-Wizards, although I'm not sure that there's a very good chance based on right now. It looks like Washington will be the fourth seed, and I don't know that the Pacers are going to get to five. So it's probably the least likely right now, but it'd be the one I would choose.
And Washington is the four right now. They're a half game behind Toronto. However, Washington still has Miami to play a couple of times. So if they can help Indiana out by beating the Heat, perhaps they would move up. This exercise is a lot more difficult to me this year than in previous years. I thought last year the clear team you wanted was Toronto because Paul George is the best player on the floor, because Toronto had playoff failures previously. And that ended up being the right line of thought. The Pacers took Toronto to the very, very end. You know, if they don't lose the handle on Game 5, they probably win that series. Regardless, Indiana gave Toronto everything it wanted and more. And I'm not sure if the Pacers match up quite as well with Toronto this season. And I think if you would have asked me this question a week ago, if you were to take Washington first, which I think I agree with, for some of the same reasons. Beal and Wall have some playoff experience, but they've had some struggles as well. And I think there's more unknown with Washington than these other three teams, which seem really solid. Toronto's been good for a long time. Boston has a lot of really solid pieces, obviously a good coach. Cleveland, that they speak for themselves. So I think if you asked me a week ago, I would have taken Boston. The reason being, you know, their best player is 5'9", and how well does that work in the playoffs? I think pretty well, but there's an argument to be made that maybe that could hurt them, and that, you know, while Crowder, they can match up on Paul George, maybe they don't have quite as many good matchups for George. But I'm switching to Toronto now, and the only reason is because what we saw happen on Tuesday night. And I think any reason to take the series into a potential mental area of your opponent's heads, Toronto made a really big deal of something that Lance admitted was wrong, was not the right move, but Toronto made a pretty big deal of that. And I think Lance Stephenson in one game showed that he, at least in some ways, can get into some of those Toronto guys' heads. I think this Toronto team's really, really solid. With Ibaka and with Tucker, they fixed and closed the few holes that they had. But regardless, if the Pacers do match up against Toronto, we again know that Paul George, at least on paper, and was last year, is the best player on the floor in that series. And Lance kind of has the mental game going with them. So I'll pick Toronto.
All right, that's interesting. I can remember, you know, the Raptors were the team the Pacers, you know, went the longest without playing, and they had the three games in 3 weeks. But before the first Raptors game, I sat next to Chrissy Myers with Pacers PR, and maybe we even brought this up on a previous podcast, but I said, oh, I think this, at the time, it would look like it would be a Pacers-Raptors series based on the matchups and the seeds. But I think that'd be fun. I think they're a good matchup. And then they proceeded to blow out the Pacers and dominate them. And then they did the same thing a second time in Toronto. And after what I saw at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, I'm not sure that that's the team you want. I'd rather a team look past you than be fired up and chomping at the bit to get a chance to play you. I think that they overreacted tremendously. But PJ Tucker is just one of these kind of guys. I think he really helps them, and I also am tired of seeing Raptors fans at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, and I don't know how you can prevent them from coming. They've got a long sellout streak at the Air Canada Center, and it's expensive to go to a game in Toronto. You can't get playoff tickets, and so that's what we saw last season, is we saw a lot of Raptors fans because they could get a cheap flight to Indianapolis, and they could get a ticket a little easier than they could in Toronto. And so, as entertaining as it would be, and maybe last year it was the NBA TV series, it wasn't the one the NBA had its sights set on, I think this would be a fascinating one to watch. It's not, though, the one that I would like to pick. So I actually, that'd be my least favorite first round series personally. But with our final pick three selection, it's supposed to be a group pick. So Cleveland or Boston, who would you rather play? I kind of have my thoughts. What do you think?
You can go however you want with this, but I am not going to ever be on record saying I want the Pacers to play LeBron James.
I think that you're probably right, but then just recency bias after watching them lose to Atlanta and then seeing tweets of them saying, I have no idea what I'm doing. And then even recency bias of seeing that game at Cleveland, it makes me feel like the Pacers are a team that can match up with the Cavs. So, it's not like the Pacers had a lot of success against Boston, and how hungry are they to get a first-round series win? When with all they've done in the last few years, they've yet to win a playoff series. I don't like that matchup really right now, even though you look at Boston and you say, once again, who's the best player on the floor? Maybe, you know, it's Paul George, and Isaiah Thomas is, for all he is, you can maybe try to shut him down. I'm going to go with Cleveland. Crazy to say. I never thought I would say that, but this is a tough one, and it's tough to come to unanimous. We need an extra. There were only four options, so it was easy to pick three.
And we're picking all four.
Yeah, we kind of lost some of the meaning of the pick three, but you know, we thought we'd have some playoff fun.
I can't pick LeBron. I hear what you're saying. The Cavs have been inconsistent this year. But those other three series, I think Paul is probably the best player on the floor. And Cleveland's the only one where it isn't. When was the last time LeBron even lost in a first round? Was it his rookie year? I mean, it's been a long, long time. So we can agree to disagree on this one. But I think the bottom line is your first pick is Washington. I think mine would be too. Although,
and we pretty much we're admitting that we can't see that because I can't envision a scenario right now where it will be Pacers Wizards, yeah. Because while Toronto, I think they have the tiebreaker on Washington, and Toronto, I just realized they've played their last home game, but they only have two games left, and one of those is against the Knicks on Sunday. So if they could get that win, they're pretty much all the way there. I kind of think that they're going to be the four seed, and I can't see the Pacers getting to five. So I mean, Toronto, Boston, Cleveland, any of those three, though, I have no idea. And the Pacers, you know, we should clarify the way we started this. Pacers still have a lot of work to do just to get into the postseason.
No doubt. And if they can get in, I don't know about you, but, you know, we do this exercise, especially the last 3 years that we've been in these specific roles. This exercise has felt easier to me in previous years than this year. I look at all four of those teams, and I don't want to play Cleveland. I don't want to play Boston. Toronto's really good. Washington is really solid. Wall, Beal. So I don't know about you. That's a tough exercise to go through. And if the Pacers are able to get their way in, I think they've got – it's obvious to say when you're not the home team in a series, but they've got plenty of their work cut out for them, whichever of these teams ends up in that spot. And the other thing is they're all healthy. You know, Beal has had some injury problems this year. Lowry has had some injury problems this year. Love has had some injury problems this year. The Celtics, not really many off the top of my head that I can think of. Horford a little bit at the beginning of the year, but as at least on the surface that I can think of, Lowry has come back. All these teams are healthy. So you can't even say, well, this team's missing a lot of guys. There's four healthy teams I'm looking at, and if the Pacers are able to get in, I think all of those provide an extremely, extremely tough matchup where the Pacers would have to overcome multiple difficulties if they were able to win a series like that, if they can get in. That's the big if, which
but
right now the magic number is three.
Let's think about the other side of it, and I was actually listening earlier today to the Bill Simmons podcast with Joe House, and he was bouncing around NBA topics, and he said from the Celtics perspective, not surprisingly, that he is talking from the Celtics perspective, that he could see, and Joe House is a Wizards fan, so it was the Celtics and the Wizards, which of the remaining Eastern Conference teams, and they said they could see the Celtics or the Wizards losing to any of the remaining the teams that are currently 5 through 9, referencing, of course, Paul George and the Bulls, you never know, and the Heat with how they'd been playing. So I think if you're one of those top four teams, there always used to be the last couple games of the season. I think I've seen this, or at least I've thought this with some of LeBron's teams over the years, that he sometimes maybe was worried about between 1 and 2. He wanted to be 1, but I don't think it was that important to him. Sometimes I thought he wanted to match up against a certain team, and I thought he wanted to avoid the Pacers even a couple years ago when they didn't help the Pacers at all by sitting against teams the Pacers needed them to beat. If you're Cleveland, do you want to play the Pacers? If you're Boston, do you want to play the Pacers? Now, if you're Boston, you know, maybe you're not scared of the Pacers, and I don't know. You don't have the opportunity to pick. But I just wonder what the view is of those teams, of a team like the Pacers right now, and comparing the Pacers to the Heat and the Bulls. I think the Pacers would be a tougher challenge than Chicago right now. I just don't know how you can expect Chicago to be anything consistent. And I thought Miami, before Deion Waiters got hurt, would be the scariest team of that bottom group, and now they may not get in.
Yeah, and what I'm about to say, I don't think these scenarios will play out because it involves a lot of jockeying here in the final few days, which there isn't a lot of time to do that. But what's interesting is you look at the Eastern Conference playoffs, and four teams clearly have separated themselves, and then the next 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 are in a group that are all very close. Washington has 48 wins in fourth. Atlanta has 41 wins in fifth. That's what I mean. However, you could have a potential scenario, and some of this is up for debate. Let's say the Pacers were to play Boston. I think you could certainly argue the best player on the floor would be Paul George, the team with the worst record and without home court. Let's say the Bulls play the Raptors. I think you could certainly make the case that Jimmy Butler, while, you know, I would rather have the duo of Lowry and DeRozan, you could certainly make the case that Jimmy Butler is the best player of that specific group and the best player on the floor. Some might not, but I think you certainly could. And if you were to have, say, Milwaukee and Washington, I don't want to face Adetokounmpo in the first round. And while Milwaukee might have some other flaws, you could make a case that under certain circumstances, three of the first four first-round series, if everything were to play out right, you could make a case the team with the worst record has the best player on the floor, which, of course, is extremely important in playoff series. We saw Paul George nearly carry the Pacers to a 7-2 upset. So I think there's going to be a lot of interest, a lot of intrigue in this. We didn't bring up Atlanta. Millsap probably not quite at that level, but the Hawks, you know, they have playoff experience. I think they've been in the playoffs more consecutive years than any other team in the Eastern Conference. So I think in general, no matter how it turns out, and we obviously hope Indiana's one of these eight teams, you're going to have a very interesting first round. And I was looking at the West too, and I think that of the West, like if it's Utah and LAC, that will be really interesting. Rockets Thunder, you got the two MVPs going at it. How great would that be?
I think the Spurs, only series Grizzlies, I don't want any part of is Spurs Grizzlies. I may not watch any of that one. I kind of over that.
Well, yeah, that's maybe not the most exciting. But even if it's Warriors Trailblazers, probably not a competitive series, but that might set a record for most three pointers made in a series before. So I'm just looking at some of these matchups. I think the playoffs could be really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely, and you just want to be a part of it. And with three games to go, at least based on tonight's results, and we decided to wait until after Friday's games to do this podcast, at least you can say the Pacers control their own destiny. Now, with the record right now, I'm curious what your take is on this, Pat. 39-40, there will be a perception or a feeling amongst fans that, oh, they've got to win the last three. Look at the records, you know, that they'll be 42-40. I kind of feel like this season's going to end at 41-41. I think I said that in November, December, and I've not really changed when you win one, lose one, that it just feels like this is a team that's going to win about half of its games and lose about half of its games. And given their road record, to just even though it's Orlando and Philadelphia, I think either one of these losses would be a little bit devastating. But you'd have to like step back for a minute and say, well, they wouldn't be that surprising. So I think if you can get to 42, I think even inside the organization about a month ago, I think that was the goal number where they thought if they got to 42, they knew about a month ago this wasn't going to be a home court advantage team, but they obviously wanted to be in the playoffs. And I think there was a feeling that 42 was kind of the magic number they were shooting for. And it's crazy that the numbers now would say that 42 might be what it takes. I think 41 might be enough, though, and you know, 41 or 42 is pretty much where it's going to be, I think.
No, I'm with you. I think 41-41 is maybe the most likely result. I think it would be a fitting end to how this season has gone. We had that humongous stretch of win-loss that I think did it tie a franchise record and didn't end up beating a franchise record for the longest.
No, it beat a franchise record. It almost beat the NBA record.
The NBA record, that's what it was. I think it either was one shy or even tied the NBA record. So they were right there. Yeah, two games on the road. Orlando's 28-51. Philadelphia's 28-51. But the Pacers are 11-28 on the road. You'd like to think that changes with Lance Stephenson. Hopefully it does. Atlanta in the building, they beat you in this building already. So three games, I think the Pacers might be slight favorites in all three, slight to moderate favorites. I think if you get two, if you win all three, you're clinched in. If you get two, then you get to 41-40, and if you or 41-41. If you get to 41-41, then Miami has to beat Washington twice and Cleveland. They've got to win all three. And even under a scenario where they would win all three, the Bulls would have to finish 2-1. You know, the Bucks would have to get another win. Atlanta would have to get a win somewhere other than Indiana if they don't beat Indiana. Those last ones are much more likely than the Miami scenario. But, you know, you'd like to take care of business. You'd like to go into the playoffs with a five-game winning streak. But the reality is if the Pacers can finish 2-1, Miami would have to beat Washington twice, who likely is going to have something to play for, and Cleveland, which hopefully they will play as if they have something to play for, because they will when the game happens. It would be really tough for Miami to go into that stretch and go 3-0. So for the Pacers' perspective, 3-0 clinches you in. 2-1 puts you in a really good position, I think. But yeah, it'd be nice to see these road struggles all season, inconsistency. It'd be nice to see five straight going into the playoffs, six straight games where you feel like you've played well. Lance Stephenson has the team on a high. And then in that scenario, you've got the Pacers. If they were to win five straight games, Lance Stephenson has them playing well. Paul George is playing well. If you're Boston, Toronto, and Washington, I think you'd want no part of that.
Yeah, I agree. So it'll be fascinating to watch. And I guess it all starts with the Frank Vogel Super Bowl Saturday night in Orlando.
Orlando's a 6 o'clock tip, by the way. So if you're listening to this, you're going to be on Pacers Weekly this morning as well, depending on when the fans listen to this versus Pacers Weekly. So we'll talk more about that on Pacers Weekly too. But it's a 6 o'clock tip against Orlando. That's abnormal for a Saturday. So radio and TV pregame coverage will begin at 5:30. I was talking to Bill Baino quickly about this on a Blue and Gold breakdown, and he said the story to both of these teams is almost identical. Two young teams, lots of guys in contract years. They're trying to prove they deserve longer contracts and more money. And when those guys have that to prove, these teams still have a lot to play for despite the fact that they're eliminated. And Orlando and Philadelphia, they're young. They have the same record. They're 28-51, but they're going to play hard. They're young, athletic kind of teams that you can't take for granted. And for Orlando, it'll start at 5:30 pregame coverage on the radio and on the TV side. What do the fans have to look forward to on your end?
We'll try to shape up or express some of the same things you just have done with the playoff picture. I believe Nate Taylor of the Indianapolis Star will stop by in the second segment. So once again, it's an early tip, as you already said. So 5:30 for Pacers Live pregame. And also want to remind fans what's coming up on Wednesday with that 8 o'clock tip against the Hawks. Fan Appreciation Night is always a fun night. I kind of wish it didn't start at 8 because it's tough for some of the kids. But if you're either on spring break or you got one that could stay up later, it's always fun there on the floor after the game where the guys give away, you know, shirts, shoes, basketballs. It's kind of just a real festive atmosphere. And my son even asked me last night, well, because he's all into these playoff, you know, scenarios, and he's checking every time we're in the car, can I check the app? And he wants to know everything. He said, Dad, what if they have Fan Appreciation Night and they don't make the playoffs? I said, well, I don't know. I guess you just have to hope it doesn't come to that, because it is a possibility, I suppose. But assuming the Pacers can't have their playoff spot, have that be the final game of the year and the home game, make plans to be there on Wednesday and provide some of the energy, really, that the fans have provided the team last week. I think the Pacers fans deserve some credit for the atmosphere they've created at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, and it was as good as it gets this past week.
Yeah, and Fan Appreciation Night, it's a really cool night. After the game, they let you down onto the floor. The players come out, autograph stuff, sign stuff, talk with the fans. And the last couple of years, Fan Appreciation Night has had a road game the very next night following. So in this case, that's not the case. It's the regular season finale. Maybe even a little bit more time. Those guys might not be quite as rushed to get to the locker room, do the interviews, get on a plane, and all of those things. And, you know, we're talking right now, Jeremiah, on Friday night. So we do these about once a week. So next week at
this
time.
Yeah, we should have a great podcast next week. Let's plan on it, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to do the season wrap-up podcast.
No. We need more of these podcasts. It's the same with Pacers Weekly. We just go until one Saturday after the season ends. So hopefully we've got a lot more podcasts to get to you. Hopefully we are not wrapping up any sort of season when we talk to you next, because when we talk to you next, Pacers and Atlanta will be concluded. Any more final thoughts from you from Orlando?
Nope. Sorry, we've had maybe a little bit of a week and a half, maybe, or 2 weeks between podcasts. So I can't say that I've been, you know, people have been reaching out clamoring, but we hope that they missed us. And hopefully it's a weekend release for this one, which is a little bit unusual as well. But maybe people are traveling, and we'll try to spread the word via social media to remind everyone. But I also like to give a shout out to maybe some of the other, you know, a lot of people are doing a great job covering the team this year, both the traditional media and then some of the other podcasts. I've had a chance to listen to some of those as well. So a shout out to everybody, because I'm really noticing a lot of enthusiasm, and you know, that makes our job more enjoyable. And I think that, you know, we've gotten pretty good feedback from, you know, things that you and I have done on TV and with this and, you know, the radio weekly program as well. And the game broadcast on the radio that, you know, it's a fun time. It's a fun era. It's a fun team. Despite what's been an up and down team, these are good guys and they've been good to be around. And we've enjoyed telling their stories. And to be honest, there has been no shortage of topics and things to talk about. So you just hope that the stories can continue past April 12th.
So if you're listening to us early Saturday morning, you can catch Pacers Weekly from 10 to 11, where you will hear from players, coaches, broadcasters, writers, and the like. Jeremiah, as always, appears on that. We also podcast it right where this one goes. So if you follow the podcasts through iTunes on this, or if you go to SoundCloud routinely, you can always catch Pacers Weekly there. And by the way, if you were listening last week and wondering where it went, it didn't go anywhere. The stations have just changed. So if you're in Indianapolis and you're listening on 93.5 and wondering all of a sudden why 93.5 doesn't have anything, hopefully by this point you have figured that out. It's been a little over a week now, but it's at 107.5 FM and 1070 The Fan is always where you can hear Pacers Weekly and the Pacers radio broadcasts in Indianapolis. Pacers versus Orlando Magic Saturday, April 8th, 6 o'clock. Pre-game coverage on Fox Sports Indiana with Jeremiah at 5:30. We'll have you on the radio side at 5:30 as well. Then Monday against Philadelphia at 7. That's the final road game before the final home game against Atlanta, 8 o'clock on Wednesday. It's an ESPN game, but Pacers.com/tickets and watch it on Fox Sports Indiana, certainly if you can't make it. And we will be talking to you, previewing the Pacers, hopefully previewing the Pacers' first round playoff opponent coming up next. For Jeremiah Johnson in Orlando, I'm Pat Boylan. Talk to you next week on the Sideline Guys podcast.